We welcome Mark Elliott, author of Confessions of an Insignificant Pastor, today to Transformed. Hello, I'm your host, Mike Powers. Being a pastor these days is a difficult position to be in. Consider these statistics. 1,500 pastors leave the ministry each month. 80% of ministers feel unqualified and discouraged in their role as pastors. 80% of new pastors will leave the ministry within the first 5 years. 80% of pastors' spouses wish their spouse would choose another profession and feel their ministry spouse is overworked. 70% of pastors constantly battle with depression. 50% of ministers would leave the ministry if they had another way of earning an income. And 85 to 90% of pastors said their greatest problem is dealing with problem people and disgruntled people. Mark has written this incredibly timely book to help us understand and strengthen our pastors. Let's listen in as Dr. Matthew Lee Smith begins a two-part interview with Mark about his book, Confessions of an Insignificant Pastor.
We are thrilled today to have with us on the podcast Dr. Mark Elliott, who has written an amazing book called Confessions of an Insignificant Pastor. We want to welcome you, Mark, and take a moment to introduce yourself to our listeners, would you?
Absolutely. Thanks, Matt. Well, I'm a pastor. I feel like I'm in an AA meeting, you know, announcing I'm a pastor. I've been a pastor for about 28 years now in the ministry full-time, and it's been quite the journey with just great, exhilarating, wonderful things that God has done and opportunities. And at the same time, as this book is very transparent, a lot of hard knocks along the way as well, which comes with life and comes with ministry, really probably any kind of job whatsoever. So I pastor a church in Wisconsin, Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and I've been married for 29 years. I have 4 children, and love my family and love my kids. Maybe this is true for you too, Matt. I've definitely overmarried. My wife is unbelievable. Oh, unbelievable wife. And such a helpmate, and alongside me in ministry as well as her own involvement in ministry. So that's a little bit about me. This is the first time I've ever written a book, which we'll talk about how that came about. So that's a new chapter in my life, the whole writing phase now.
Let's talk about that Confessions of an Insignificant Pastor. That's a loaded title. Can you kind of explain how you came to that title and what brought you to the point to write such a book since you haven't written a book before?
No. You know, sometimes, you know, when you follow God, there's these chapters that you don't see or you haven't gotten to that place in life yet. And maybe you never saw it coming, you know. It's like in a movie or a book you read, there's those turning points. There's those moments that happen that totally change your life and perhaps even change the direction of your life. And that's kind of how this whole writing thing came to me. About 3 years ago, I was at a pastor's conference, and it was a break time for lunch, and I was walking to lunch, and I ran into a couple of pastor friends who were together, and we stopped, and we were talking, and this one friend had said he had just written a book, and we were talking about the book he had written, and was really excited for him and that. And so after that conversation, they went their way. I went mine the opposite way. And I got about 4 or 5 steps down. And I just sensed so strong on me at that moment that God was saying to me personally, it's time. You're going to write. It's time. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't have a book idea. I hadn't been writing a book, nothing like that. But it was just kind of a real God moment for me. So I came back from that conference, and about 2 or 3 weeks later, I went away for some prayer time and planning and things like that. Took my computer, Bible, a couple books, and was just by myself. And during that 2-3 day period of time, this book came out. About 160 pages of this book in those 2 days came out. Now, it was real rough, of course, but wow. It just came out. It was just like God had put this in me, but there had been a door locked there, and it hadn't really had the opportunity to get out. And it's like he opened that door, and it was like a flood that this book just came out of me. I mean, I'm sure not everybody who writes books, and perhaps even my other future books I'm working on now, are that kind of experience. But for me, my first book, it was that kind of experience. It was just God was in the room, you knew it was so real, you knew it was so strong, and that this was a message that was not just a part of my life and my heart, but this was God's heart for His church and God's heart for pastors who are struggling in ministry, struggling with family, struggling with feelings of insignificance and do I matter and what I'm doing, does it matter? And all of those struggles that all of us, you know, work through as we look in the mirror in the morning and we say, okay, good morning, you know, who are you? Who is that person that I'm looking at in that mirror? And what is it that God has called me to do and what am I supposed to do today and where do I start? And so for me, the whole writing thing just came out of nowhere for me. And it was kind of my very first, I guess, you know, and I was in a ball, you know, when that happened.
You really grabbed a real strong chord inside the church. You mentioned some statistics on your website and in the preface of your book. Let me just run through a few of those for our listeners who don't have that in front of them. And then we'll talk a little bit about that, because we can truly see, now I have over 30 years of ministry in the church, and I understand some of these statistics, but most people in the pew wouldn't realize it. You mentioned 1,500 pastors leave the ministry each month, 80% of ministers feel unqualified and discouraged in their role as pastors, 80% of new pastors will leave the ministry within their first 5 years, 80% of pastors' spouses wish their spouse would choose another profession and feel their ministry spouse is overworked. That's an amazing statistic. 70% of pastors constantly battle with depression. 50% of ministers would leave the ministry if they had another way to earn an income. Right now, one out of every two, that's an amazing statistic. 85 to 90% of pastors said their greatest problem is dealing with problem people and disgruntled people. These are statistics that surely you and I are very familiar with, and the colleagues are, but perhaps a lot of the people who are listening to this podcast, they're kind of shocked by those numbers. Maybe you'd comment on those statistics and tell us what you're seeing inside the American church. This is surely representative of it. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I think that the people in the pews would be shocked, because typically on a Sunday morning when they see their pastor, he's got his game face on. He's looking good, he's prepared, he's ready, he's smiling, he's happy, he's putting on what he perceives that they want him to be like. You know, if you're going to be a leader, you're not going to put out and say, hey, I'm a loser, come follow me. But if you're going to be a leader of a church and of a community, then you've got to put out an image or an aura that you know what you're doing and that you're in charge, that you've heard from God, that it's okay for you to follow me and have confidence in following me as your spiritual leader. So on Sunday, what they see is that. And sometimes that's very real, and sometimes it's not so real. It may look real on the outside as they look at you, but on the inside, those stats are happening. On the inside, you're dying. On the inside, you're hurting. But you can't tell anybody. You can't tell anybody. And if you tell your wife, your spouse, as these stats bear out, she's got the same issues and the same problems and the same feelings as you do. And yet you're supposed to get up again next Sunday in that pulpit and be the man of God with, wow, with all those feelings stirring inside of you.
Well, I certainly can empathize with that. And there's been many, many, many times when I've felt like these statistics, and I know that you too have. Your book's obviously written to slow those numbers down. Can you kind of briefly explain for our listeners who this book is written for and what you hope God will do with the book?
Well, the church is under attack. I think that's very obvious, especially in the United States. I mean, we're one of the few countries that aren't growing as far as people coming to faith in Christ. Most of the other countries, the percentages are growing because of what we've done through the years and the decades with missions and the indigenous church and all of that. But in the U.S., most staff are saying that we're actually decreasing in growth. So I think the church is either asleep and or is also under attack from the enemy. And if you're going to, if an enemy's going to come against you, he's going to go up to the generals first. And yeah. So I think the pastor's family, you know, the husband, the wife, the children, the pastor's family is the primary target of the enemy. Because if he can take the general out, then the rest of the church, the rest of the people, you know, they feel like, well, what are we going to do? We don't know what to do. Who's going to lead us? And so then the church is in disarray. And so there's this attack that's, and I believe in the last days that we're living in, that there's this attack that's coming against the church and especially against the generals. You know, many surveys have said that 85 to 90% of churches are either in decline or they're plateaued in their growth and their ministry. And that probably is a reflection of declining or plateaued pastors. That inside the man, inside the woman, there's a decline, there's a plateau, there's a struggle. We don't know who to go to, who to talk to. If we tell this person, we lose our job. If we tell that person, then they look at us differently. If we would announce that to people in our church, or it would spread through the people in our church, people would leave and then go to another church where somebody there seems to have it going on, or at least they're smart enough not to say that they're having problems or struggles. And so there's this attack that's happening on the church, and it's especially targeted at the pastor and his family. And so pastors need to be encouraged. They need to be built up. Things need to happen for them to grow and develop as a person, as a man, as a woman, not just ministry, but who they are as a person, and dealing with these feelings and these struggles that they're battling with on the inside. And so this book, yeah, it's written because of all these horrible stats that none of us like to believe. None of us like to hear that. Even as pastors, we don't. And definitely the people that's in their churches don't want to hear that. Because now they're going, well, is our pastor one of those guys? 8 out of 10 are. Is he one? Is his wife one? And more than likely, they are. But we don't want to know that. We don't want to feel that way. We want to just sweep that under the rug and look the other way and stick our head down in the hole and deny what's really happening. Well, the problem with denying what's really happening is it's not going to get any better. So we've got to confess, we've got to fess up, as they would say in the South, to what's really going on before we can deal with the issues and deal with the problems. And so this book is written, you know, obviously to pastors, to say, look, you're not the only one. All of us are struggling with these things. Let's just be honest about it. You know, I'll tell you some of my stories that are painful, or some of my weaknesses in these chapters. But then I also bring in the characters of God's Word of the Bible that have the same confession. They have the same weaknesses as I have and as pastors of today have. And so it's written to pastors to try to get them to talk to one another. At the end of every chapter, there's 3 practical applications. The first being probably the most important is there's small group questions. So pastors that meet with other pastors in accountability groups and maybe their denomination has sections or things like that, get-togethers. This is something the pastors could be reading, and then when they get together to pray together, they could talk about and share about what they're learning from each particular chapter based upon those small group questions. So there's the practical side of that. It's also written for laypersons, though, and it's written for deacon boards or church boards because, you know, they, like you said earlier, they don't know. And so maybe this book will put them in the know so that they realize how important it is for them to pray for their pastor and his family, how important it is for them to encourage their pastor. I mean, he may look really good on Sunday and like he's got it all together, but the truth is he's a human being just like all of us, and he's got struggles too. And so it's meant to kind of shock and wake up the church, not so that they run and hide into a cave somewhere, but so that they'll stand with their pastor arm in arm and encourage him and pray for him and for his family. So it's really written to the whole church at different layers and different levels.
Wow. Well, it's a great book. I noticed that we have a whole bunch of those stats I quoted. Most of them are in the 80s. You know, 80% feel unqualified. 80% of new pastors leave within the first 5 years. 80% of spouses wish they could do another job. And then there's that other one, that 85 to 90% of pastors said their greatest problem is dealing with problem people and disgruntled people. Wow, I'm telling you, it's amazing. Another stat I've seen is that the average pastor leaves because of 3 grumbling, disgruntled people in the church. When we wrap those kinds of ideas together with just jumping into your first chapter, of course, I'm in Los Angeles, so you're title of your first chapter really caught my eye when you say, I'm a nobody from 47452, and I immediately contrast that to Beverly Hills 90210. Tell us why pastors then feel so insignificant. Obviously, they feel like they're a nobody from nowhere.
Yeah, and you know, but 85 to 90% of dealing with disgruntled people, you know, when you get into the ministry, you think that it's this really good, fun, glorified, you know, camp meeting experience. We all love one another. We sing Kumbaya, and you know, and everybody loves you. You're the pastor, and life is good, and we kind of live in this little bubble of perfectionism, perhaps we think. But then we get into the ministry, we get into the church, and we realize that in most churches, there's a struggle for control.
Yes.
It's a control issue. It deals with spiritual authority and what's God's best in his line of spiritual authority, and he flows through spiritual authority, and do we bypass that? Do we come against that? And so there's a struggle for control that happens, when that first hits you, it's pretty devastating. And then when it happens again and again and again and again, now it's really devastating, and so now you start to put up your guard, you know, because, you know, you've been burned so many times, and now you're trying to defend yourself from being hurt again. And so we put up this guard, which now interferes with our ability to minister to people, heart to heart, spirit to spirit, because we put up these walls. And so our ministry then may come off as disingenuous. It may come off as just saying the right words, but no heart or no feeling behind it, because of the scars, because of the hurt that we have. We put up these defenses. And the more that those kind of things happen, you know, in our ministry, the more we feel insignificant. Because we feel like, gosh, I've been here 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, and this same stuff is still going on. Why am I even doing this? It doesn't seem to matter. Nothing's changing, you know. Human nature, fallen nature is the same as it's always been, and we have, you know, we're wandering around in the desert for 40 years. We're seeing the same tree, the same sand. We're seeing the same rocks, you know, and we feel like, you know, nothing's changing. Nothing's happening. And so we're struggling with who we are. We're struggling with our call in ministry. And it seems like that most of us can only handle that for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Therefore, 80% drop out within their first 5 years of ministry.
Sure.
So the staying power, to stay in the ministry long term, to have a long term effect, is getting past that 5 years is really hard. You know, Matt, one of the things that I was curious about and I thought about, and maybe this will be a future book someday, but as I look through the difficult times of ministry for pastors, surveys have been done, and you know, the first 5 years are really tough, you know, and then there's, you know, the teenage, you know, years that are tough and whatever. But those surveys, those time periods seem to me to match up to the same distinct problem times in a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
When most divorces happen.
Yes.
Most divorces happen. And there seems to be some correlation there. I don't understand that. I don't have any proof of that. It's just an observation. But
the relationship stressor.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Exactly.
You know,
so the whole insignificance thing is, you know, I think insignificance is part of the fall. I think because of the fall of man and because of sin and broken relationship and fellowship with Christ has put within us this sense of insignificance, that we don't matter, that we're less than, that we're always going to be on the bottom, you know, digging with our nails to try to get up out of the dirt. That as a result of the fall, that we have this battle, I think, that's part of the curse, I think, is that we battle with insignificance.
Hmm. Wow.
Well, you really see that in the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
In the Garden of Eden, you see that, you know. Where are you? You know, well, they don't want to answer. They know that they're inferior. They know that they're insignificant. They know they've already blown it, you know. Why are you hiding behind those leaves, you know? What's up with that? Why are you feeling guilty? Why are you feeling less than, or you're feeling separated from me? And so I think as a part of the fall, that insignificance has come.
Now, when you couple that, then you jump into, by the time you get to chapter 3, you're talking about pastors admitting that they don't exactly know what they're doing. Most of us are trained well in Bible and not too well in systems or management or leadership. You begin to make the point, I think it's a great point in the book, about who's following who and who's following the leader
and who is the leader, and you've touched on that already in this interview. But you make this statement on page 54 that really hit me. It says, in the book, it says, it's hard to follow the leader when you're a poor listener. It's hard to mimic the leader when you become distracted. It's hard to be a good follower when you think you're better qualified leader than God's designated leader in your life. Obviously, talking about people in the congregation, and of course, talking about ourselves when we're not listening to God as pastors. It's not so much about your qualifications, you say, as it is about your divine appointment. The vision and direction of God flows through the anointed appointment of leadership He places in your life. Now, I tweeted that last sentence, and got some interesting reactions from people who kind of chafed at that. They thought that education and all sorts of other things were important. But when you and I talked with our friend Len Sweet, he says, as you pointed out in many surveys, he says 75% of American churches are dying. And another 20% are plateaued, and the reason he thinks that's true is because they're taking people from the dying churches, so that those churches probably are dying too. You just can't see it in the numbers. My question is, could this be one of the reasons? How does such an attitude of not listening to God, whether it would be the pastor or the people not listening to the pastor in the local church, affect that ministry of that pastor? How does that, especially when you're talking about in the church, the pastor's kind of, he's just feeling awful because nobody's really following the leader. Nobody's listening to his appointment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can't make someone follow you. They have to give up their will to do that. You know, when Jesus came and he was picking his disciples out, he often we saw the phrase, he would say, "Come and follow me." Now, they had a choice. And I think it was Peter and James and John, it said that immediately they dropped their nets and followed him. Immediately. You know, quick obedience. So people in our churches, you know, we can't make someone follow us. I mean, they will or they won't. And they have to make that decision. And there's lots of things that they take probably into consideration. You know, the most important thing that they should take into consideration is that if God has appointed and anointed that pastor to be that shepherd of that church and that community, then you should submit to his spiritual leadership. To not submit to his spiritual leadership is to not submit to God and God's spiritual leadership over your life. We like to somehow think that we can be in error or we can be in broken relationship and fellowship with our spiritual leaders, our pastors, and our small group leaders, or whoever it might be that's over us, that somehow we can be in broken fellowship and relationship there and still be in God's will. Well, we can't. We can't. I look at spiritual leadership like an umbrella. It's like an umbrella of protection over your life. And as long as you are walking in and submitting to that spiritual leadership, you are under that protective umbrella of God. But when you step outside of that spiritual authority that God has placed in your life, you step out from underneath the protective umbrella of His grace over your life too. Because now you put yourself in a place of danger. And typically, if you pulled yourself out of relationship and spiritual authority to that leader that God has given to your life, then typically that disobedience comes out and looks ugly as it plays out in the church. And that rebellion causes sin to happen. It causes chaos in the church. It causes confusion. It causes church splits. It causes a lot of pain with innocent people who had nothing to do with it, but they were there. They were in the area. And they get hurt in the process of this. But it's not a game. You know, these are people with real lives, real hearts, real spirits, and we can't be fighting over who's in charge and who's in control, because we can't have, you know, too many generals and everybody's a general and there's two followers. I mean, if somebody's got to hear from God, somebody's got to lay the word of God out to us and give us a direction. And I believe God is the one that anoints and appoints that pastor.
Yes.
And you're talking about him. You're not him.
You're mentioning when we started, you talked about we're under attack. And I think one of the things that most pastors forget and a lot of the books that I read seem to forget it, is that Satan's sown tares among the wheat as well, and pastors are really struggling. They're just really, really wounded. You talk a lot about the emotional baggage pastors have. You spend a whole chapter in chapter 4 on that. As you listen to people since you've written the book, does that surprise lay people that pastors have a lot of emotional baggage? What have you heard?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, there's this image sometimes of you know, the pastor in the up on the pedestal, that somehow he's that much superior, or he's perfect, or that much better than you, and that isn't necessarily true. You know, he is a person, or she is a person, as a pastor with the same emotional struggles that you have, with the same sin issues that you have. Of compromise, of all, the same things you and I, all of us battle with, pastors battle with too. And so, kind of pop that bubble for people. There's a part of them that doesn't want that. You know, they wanna believe the thing that's untrue. They wanna somehow overlook or sidestep or come around and not really come to the realization that, golly, you know, he could be a human being. And he is. And he may not show all of that. He may not wear his emotions on his sleeves, but he's struggling emotionally, most of us, at some time or another, if not all the time, battling with our emotions. We're emotional people. God created us that way. You know, God is an emotional person. And emotions aren't bad. They're neutral. They can be good or bad. That God has given us those emotions to express our feelings, to express what's happening on the inside of us, whether it's sadness or whether it's joy, whether it's depression or it's exhilaration. You know, God has given us those wonderful things called emotions. It's like a two-edged sword. At the same time, it's very wonderful, but the flip side of it is that it can be really hard and it can be very difficult.
Yes.
With those emotions. And being that most pastors are men, still, most of us as men have a harder time with talking about emotions, maybe even recognizing why we feel that way and not really knowing what the emotion is that's causing us to feel frustrated. And so we try to maybe kind of hide those and put on our Superman cape and hide behind that we, you know, we're not emotional people. When in fact we are. You know, any man has emotions. You know, he may think he's macho and he can take over the world and nothing bothers him, but the truth is he has emotions. Now, he may not be in contact and really know what with himself and what those are, but he has them. He has them.
And if you stuff them
down and stuff them, exactly, if you stuff them and push them down there, that's gonna cause some real, whether health issues for him or her.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to show up with heart attacks or high blood pressure or whatever it might be. You know, those emotions are releases for some of those stresses that they're going through. And they're healthy if it's done in a healthy manner. And so we all have emotional baggage. We have things that happened in the past that we regret. Yeah, God's forgiven us of those things, but we haven't forgotten about those things. We still think about those things. We're reminded of those things. And, of course, the accuser of the brethren, Satan, loves to remind us of those things. And, you know, just shove those in our face.
Sure.
But you're no good. Look at that. You didn't see what you've done. No one's going to follow your leadership. You can't speak on behalf of God. Who do you think you are?
We've been talking to Mark Elliott, and the book is Confessions of an Insignificant Pastor. In the show notes, you see how to get a copy. There are also opportunities to get bulk copies, and also Mark would be glad to come and speak to your church, your group, and information is found on his website, which is linked on our show notes today. Mark, thank you for investing in us and investing in the time to write the book and now the interview. We appreciate you so much.
Well, thank you, man, and thanks to all of your listeners as well.
And with that, we conclude the first part of our two-part interview with Pastor Mark Elliott, author of the book Confessions of an Insignificant Pastor. We know you will want to get some copies of this book for your church leaders and ministry people, and you can do so by following the links in the show notes. In our second part of this interview, Mark will share some of the big problems pastors encounter and how we can encourage our pastoral staff to stay strong and stay in ministry. You will not want to miss the conclusion of this most important interview. Until then, this is your host, Mike Powers, encouraging you to encourage your pastor today.